WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Another group that worked with Bob Dylan was The Band. They were his touring band in 1965 and 66 when Dylan first went electric. After that difficult tour in the summer of 1967, the musicians who would become the band holed up with Bob Dylan in a big pink house near Woodstock, where they wrote and recorded a bunch of songs on home recording equipment.
If your memory serves you well, we were going to meet again and wait. Somebody to unpack all my things and sit before it gets too late.
These songs were released years later as The Basement Tapes. They revealed an embryonic stage of what would become The Band. Last fall, the band's drummer Levon Helm published his autobiography, This Wheel's on Fire. At the same time, Helm, along with former bandmates Rick Danko and Garth Hudson, put out a new album called Jericho. Terry Gross spoke with Levon Helm in November. He told her about that first tour with Dylan in 1965. Dylan had been booed at the Newport Folk Festival when he came out with his electric guitar. The Band became Dylan's electric backup band. Terry asked Levon Helm if Dylan gave them any advice at their first gig about what to do if the crowd got hostile.
He told us, we had a little huddle there backstage before we went on for the second half. He played the first half by himself, and it went just smooth as silk, and the crowd loved it. And the second half, we huddled, and we knew. We had read and heard about things getting a little bit tough in Newport. He told us, whatever happens, don't stop playing. Just keep playing and give it a chance to settle down. And we did, and I don't know if it ever settled or not.
You left the band shortly after it became Dylan's backup band. Why did you leave it? I mean, this was, like, in retrospect, a great opportunity for the group.
Well, it was, and I probably could have been smarter about it, but we had played most of the American part of the tour. Bob wanted to play Europe. He wanted to go to Australia. And so we played through the Northeast, which was pretty tough. Towns like Boston, they gave us a standing ovation of boos. And at the same time, we would hit Fort Worth, Texas, and it would be just another good rock and roll party. But it started wearing on me, I got to the point where I couldn't find enough funny things to laugh about. I didn't feel like joking around all the time like I usually do, and I decided that maybe I should let the tour go ahead to Europe and to Australia and some foreign places without running the risk of making a monkey out of myself. So I stayed back and waited on everybody. I went back to Arkansas and played with the Cate Brothers Band and kind of picked up where I'd left off playing dances and so forth.
So you rejoined the band after the band moved to the Catskills, which was after Bob Dylan's motorcycle accident.
Yes, ma'am. He had a bike, spilled his bike after they got back, so it kind of changed directions, and instead of so much touring, there was a lot of extra time, put music together, and Garth set up his Ampex tape machine in the basement there at Big Pink, and we started getting together and just putting songs together, and trying our voices, finding out, how to stack our harmonies and just things like that that helped us out later on.
Well, you write in your book that you think the song Ain't No More Cain, which is actually recorded on the Basement Tapes, was a real breakthrough for the group. What did you think was a breakthrough about it?
Probably the voices. That's when we first started swapping the lead vocals around. This We would trade verses, and we found out a couple of different ways to stack the harmonies and the answers up with the lead vocal. So that helped us a lot as far as finding out, you know, the different possibilities for our voices.
Well, let's hear Ain't No More Cain from the Basement Tapes.
All right.
Ain't no more Cain.
That's the band, and my guest is Levon Helm, who's co-authored a new book called This Wheel's on Fire, Levon Helm and the Story of the Band. The band also has a new record called Jericho. So when you moved to the Catskills, and the band was living in a house that was pink and was nicknamed Big Pink, did you move into the house with them?
Yes, I did. Moved into the house there. There was an extra spot for me, and we used it as our headquarters and music room for a couple of 3 years there.
So after recording in the basement, you finally got to record an album. The album was The Big Pink, your first album, but the band's name was not initially supposed to be The Band. What was it supposed to be, and how did you end up with the name of The Band?
We didn't know what it was supposed to be, and we had signed an agreement with Capitol Records. Well, it hadn't come to that yet. We were trying to sign an agreement, and we ended up signing the agreement as The Crackers, and we thought that was funny. And nobody else did, especially the record company.
Was the joke that everybody except you was from the North?
Well, that, you know, we tried the Honkies just for variety, and they didn't think that was too funny either. People referred to us as the band. You know, Bob's at the hotel, and the band is headed for the sound check. So on the Big Pink record, when it came time for the credits to list everybody's names, I think it said something like The Band, and then underneath it, it told you who all was in the band. So when we cut our second record, the record company kind of shifted that back around, and they liked that better than The Crackers.
Levon Helm is my guest. When did things start going bad for the band, within the band? Dissension and things like that. I mean, for example, you write in the book about how really annoyed you were when you'd see on records that Robbie Robertson had all the songwriting, or most of the songwriting credits.
Well, that was a bit of a distraction. I didn't think it was quite fair. Not that Robbie didn't do a lot of the songwriting, most of it in some spots, but at the same time, Richard did some good work, and I always thought that that Garth and Rick and myself was there all the way, no matter whose idea the song was, or if it was halfway there, or, you know, it was finished. Most of our stuff then got finished under that workshop kind of circumstance, and that was just one of the things that came up that kind of created a little bit of tension in the group. I could see it, you know, hampering our collaboration, and it started bothering the spirit of it.
Robbie Robertson, in I guess it was 76, decided he wanted to leave the band, and that the band should break up and have this big finale concert and go out with a real bang. You didn't want the band to break up, so you tried to resist that, but I guess you weren't able to.
Well, I wasn't, by then, maybe the last waltz started back, you know, during some of the disenchantment that I felt when the songs didn't reflect what I thought was the true spirit of things. So by the time the last waltz came up, it was no secret our collaboration and I thought that the quality of our music had suffered. I didn't hear us getting better. I heard us, doing albums with old songs that we liked as opposed to getting in and really trying to grow a fresh crop of songs. And I certainly didn't want to end the band. The last waltz, didn't set right with me. But, you know, there comes a time when we all want to move on, and that's what we did.
Martin Scorsese directed the film The Last Waltz, the film of the last concert performance in which there were lots and lots of guest stars. Did you like the film?
I liked some parts of it. Overall, I didn't like it a whole lot because I felt that some of the best songs and some of the best moments were still on the cutting room floor.
Now, the band reunited in '83, but just a few years after that, Richard Manuel hung himself. Were you shocked by that? Did you see it coming at all?
You know, it's hard to see trouble coming. At the time, I thought we were doing pretty well. We didn't have a recording contract, and there didn't seem to be one available for us. And what kept us going was when we played for the people. When we played music, everybody liked it, and we never had anybody ask for their money back, and I thought we were still sounding good, and we were evolving. It was painful, but I didn't think it was as painful as that, and I certainly didn't see it coming.
Did you think about him a lot when putting together the new record?
Yes, we did, because we had Country Boy, which was the last song that Richard recorded with the band, and it was a great tune, a great performance on Richard's part, and we were never able to get it finished and to finish the other songs that needed to go with it to make up a whole album. So it didn't get to come out when we thought it would, and when we finally managed to put the rest of the songs for Jericho together, I don't think it occurred to any of us not to use Richard's song.
That's Levon Helm of the band speaking with Terry Gross. This is Fresh Air.